Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. And we've lowered prices. You can save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the law firm of Davis & Davis. We're not a real law firm.
Go ahead, grab a beer, a glass of wine, sit back and listen.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting
episode of Davis and Davis.
Whatever the hell we call this.
Podcast from hell.
Yeah. And for those of you, we were going to start at 7:30 because I had to work late tonight. And it is now 7:55, but for the first time, it was not my fault.
Burke was a dumbass, yes.
I guess I need to start our discussion here with, I went to the eye doctor last week.
Okay.
On Wednesday after the show. I'll bring that up. And I sat in his office and he turned, he looked at me and he said,
"Never been things I would be happy and my curse will be lifted.
You can go off and rule the universe from beyond the grave."
Indeed.
Or check into a psycho ward, whichever comes first, huh?
Actually, that's not what he said. He did
never
say,
gets old,
"I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights."
Tights?
You wear tights? No, I don't wear tights. I wear the required uniform. Tights. Shut up.
So, he, I told him that I use my computer a lot, so I now have a prescription for computer glasses.
Yeah,
which
yeah, that's what these are.
Which,
like, I literally measured exactly the distance from my eyeball to my screen, and took that with me and said, "It's exactly 15.5 inches." She's like, "Wow, you did your homework." Like, yeah.
Yeah, he asked me, he said, "How far is your screen?" I said, "About 3 feet." Because my screens are a lot further away. And he did all the calculations and wrote a prescription, and I was like, okay. My eyes have gotten worse.
And they will continue to as you get older.
I am now at a 2.5. on the Richter scale.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't, yeah, that could be good or bad. I have no clue.
I just go in and say,
"I want glasses," and they do it. Yeah.
That's the magnification level, 2.5. That means that it is magnifying 2.5 times the size of everything. And honestly, right now, I can't read Burke's name on the screen. So that was some of the excitement that I had this week. I'm buying a car.
Oh, what did you finally, because we've had some discussions about this over the past week,
yes,
or two, or 10.
I found.
Did you go with the Ford?
No.
Oh.
I found a 2011 BMW 328i convertible with 56,000 miles on it and never been in an accident.
I'm just going to say I told you so right now.
Oh, shit. Oh, no. That's on my iPad.
Oopsie.
Thank God it is. Thank God it's Gorilla Glass. Okay. Here's the thing. When we had our conversation, you said yourself that the Mazda was a good choice.
A Miata. Yeah, it's, yeah.
You Ramics, said that.
Whatever.
You said that the BMW was actually a good choice, but a little more expensive to repair. I went and did a whole bunch of research, and the owner took it to the BMW dealership every year. He had them change the oil. He had them do everything. There are over 18 entries, and they're all going to the same dealership, which is the dealership here.
But let me ask you a follow-up question to that.
Sure.
Did you call said dealership and ask them how much they charge for an oil change?
I don't have to worry about that because Quick Car down the road here actually does BMWs.
Okay.
So, and they only charge $35. So I'm not worried about it.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a used car. I'm paying under 10 grand for it.
Nice. Is it private owner?
No, it's being sold through a dealership.
Oh, okay. The one you were telling me about?
Yep.
You seem to like them quite a bit.
Because of the fact that I know how thorough they are. My next door neighbor here had a BMW 5 Series, and I used to take him over there to go get his oil changed and all that. His oil changes were only like $75 over there, which is not a lot of money. Where he got hit was the plastic piece on his sunroof was $4,000.
The one plastic gear that they put into the assembly to make your top go up. Yeah, it's a $500 piece of plastic.
That is guaranteed to break. Like, even the service manager was like, no, it's built to break. It's going to break every 50 to 70,000 miles. It's like, damn, that's really asshole-ish, but I like it.
I feel like I did stuff this week and I can't remember a damn thing. I was going to write something down and totally forgot about it. And apparently other than my my daughter performing surgery on my back, I've done nothing all week.
which daughter was this?
The eldest one, the one that's, you know, going into nursing school. I had this big honking skin tag underneath my left shoulder blade. Oh, it was like if you slept wrong and it got twisted, it got all pissed off and angry. And I'm like, you know, screw it, cut this damn thing off. And so she got some, it was cleaned it all up, and you know, and she just tried snipping it off with one pair of clippers that didn't go through, and that hurt. Then she got another pair of scissors, and it went right through. And I was like, oh, that ain't bad at all. Okay, so I got a little Band-Aid on it now, and it's much better.
Yeah, I did not need to hear that. Okay, because I've got like four under my arms. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no.
Well, they do. When you cut them, they do bleed quite a bit. I would suggest doing the freezing them off if they're under your arms.
I was actually going to do the rubber band thing.
It's not bad. It just takes forever. And then, like, the rubber band starts slipping down to about the midway point. So you're still going to have a bump. I'm going to try the freezing thing and see how that goes, because I've got a few more under my arms also. And he's sweating.
Oh, my gosh. I'm about to. Well, if he Burke noticed, I had my phone in my hand, which means Scott's turning the air conditioner down.
Took his glasses off, wiped his head. I was like, oh, we got to mess with that.
All right, so I guess I'm going to go through the rest of, before we get to our alcohol, I'm going to go through the rest of my weekend.
Okay.
Which consisted of a pretty box coming to my house. Yeah.
Strap yourselves in, kids. This is a good one. I know the ending, too.
So it showed up, I think it was Saturday. But I had to work Saturday, Sunday. I had Monday off, so that I was like, okay, I'm just gonna wait until Monday. So I open the ingenious little box, and I pull out some 8 gigabyte RAM, and put in 64 gigabytes of RAM, and I press the power button. And it lights up all nice and shiny. I was like, ooh. Ooh. So.
Sunday you sent me the picture of the box.
I do believe it said it's alive. the same thing you sent me when yours lit up.
Yeah. It's not perfect, but it's alive.
So I fired it up. Did not put my NVMe in yet. So, and I haven't transferred everything over. I did hook up Zoom. I got onto Zoom. I was like, okay, that's cool. That's fine. I haven't transferred all my music and stuff over, so I'm not using it tonight. But I did play Planet Coaster.
And Scott called me on the phone whilst he was firing this up, and it was the most hilarious.
I was like, Burke, I've got to go ride some roller coasters.
He's like, okay, normally it takes me 8 minutes to load my biggest park, and like, oh shit, it's already on. What the hell? Oh, look how pretty the torches are. Oh man, there's fireworks and they're so pretty.
My old computer was so slow that the fireworks show that I did, which is, I think it times out to be 11 minutes long. On my old computer, it would start shooting off at 8 o'clock in the evening at the park, and it would finish when the park was closing. Now that the computer is actually running at a regular pace, it starts at 8 o'clock in the evening and finishes at about noon the next day.
Just gonna have to adjust that a little bit.
Gonna have to fix my fireworks display now.
And then he jumps on a coaster and takes it for a ride. He's like, oh.
Because when you rode a roller coaster on my old computer, it was choppy the whole way.
And you're getting five frames a second, maybe, yeah, if you're lucky.
It was absolutely, it was painful. After you put about 10 rides into your park, it was painful to try and play the game. So I rode a bunch of roller coasters. I was like, this is great. One thing I did notice is that my mouse was choppy. And I had my wired mouse, which is made by a company called Perixx, Perixx, whatever. It's a wired mouse, with the thumb ball.
Okay, yeah,
I love it. It's a great mouse, but not so compatible with the new computer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna go to their website and see if they have drivers for it. There may be, because my Logitech, when I turned on my Bluetooth mouse, no problems whatsoever.
Flawless. Okay.
No jumpiness. No nothing. I was like, oh my gosh, here we go. This is the way of the world. And what was awesome, what was incredibly awesome about this new computer, when I was setting it up, the GeForce, okay, I had the same problem that you had. I could not update the drivers for my GeForce video card.
Okay.
What I ended up having to do was go to the website, download the drivers, instead of using their interface. Their interface will not let me update drivers.
That's got to be a Windows issue then, man.
So I was actually able to download the drivers, put them in, everything. And on the startup, after the drivers updated, I got a prompt screen, which asked me, what are you going to do with this computer? And it asked you about 15 questions. And I said, yes, I'll do gaming. Yes, I will do video. And then it automatically set up the video card on its own, so that it's optimized for video. I mean, as far as video editing goes, and it's optimized for games. It's cool as shit. Are you frozen? I think we lost Burke.
You're back.
Yeah, I don't know where I went, but I'm back.
That was wild.
So everyone knows I am. You're locked up again. Are you there now?
I am. Are you having bandwidth problems? Because your video is very pixelated.
Oh, it says my internet connection is unstable.
Oh. So now it's not my fault. You're clearing up.
I have 26 minutes left. Holy crap. I only have 100 megabytes down.
Yeesh.
I have 11 megabytes up, which is normal.
Yeah.
But the down is, I bet you something, it's been fluctuating the past couple of days. Something's going on down there at Spectrum. Welcome to Spectrum. Am I recording right now? Yeah, I am.
I'm at 325 down and 10.7 up. So
I really hate you. I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So okay. I am not recording on the new computer yet because I didn't transfer over all the sound bites and all that stuff. So we may have some issues tonight. It won't be here next week.
It'll all be perfect.
So, yeah. What else was I gonna? I had something else on my mind before all hell broke loose.
Did you want to talk about the news of the week?
Well, what did you do? What news?
Oh, like Roe versus Wade and 50 people in the back of a semi truck dead, and
you know, the thing is that this show will come out 4 weeks after all that has happened.
True.
So, I mean,
we can't be topical per se.
By that point in time, maybe they will have passed a law. I mean, God's honest, that's what they should have done in the first place. They shouldn't have relied on Roe versus Wade. The federal government needs to pass a law saying, boom, people have the right to choose. Once they do that,
the ones, okay.
Well, once they do that, there's nothing else to be done. The Supreme Court threw it back at the states, but the federal government has the right to pass a law, but they won't. I don't know why. They haven't done it for 40 years. They were living off of Roe versus Wade, and at some point in time, somebody was going to overturn it. So, now they need to get off their duffs and pass a law so that nobody can be infringed upon.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. And the other stuff, the truck full of Mexicans that died down here, while that's a horrible thing, it comes down to the fact that we're not checking for that stuff anymore. You got to tighten up security on the borders. That's all there is to it. It was a truck full of people. We have X-ray machines. If you drive your truck into California, why are they not at the border? I'm done talking about government. It just seems like our government is full of a bunch of idiots, and I'm just
this is true.
Done talking about it. Because they're never going to fix it. And the thing is, they keep getting reelected. Democrat or Republican, they keep getting reelected. So,
the great Netflix show, the guy that does Adam Ruins Everything,
yeah,
did a Netflix special all about the government called The G Word. And it was a really great show. It was a really great show.
It's a... Yeah, I go to work. All the people there want to talk politics. I drive around in my cart and don't talk to anyone. Have a good day.
Okay. I can't think of anything else that I did all week other than deal with internet idiots and the fact that Kelly Blue Book is saying that a 4-year-old Civic should be traded in for more money than you could buy a brand new one for. You have to ask these people, okay, do you know anyone that would buy a 4-year-old Civic over buying a brand new one because of the same price? Anyone? Yes, but Kelly Blue Book said, all right, fucking sell it to them then.
I don't know what to tell you about. I mean, Kelly Blue Book, I don't trust them. I saw
their algorithms are driven by the fact that all of the rental car companies are scooping up every used car in the market, paying well over retail for them, so that drives the algorithm to go, well, this is what they're selling for. No, unless you can sell your car directly to a rental car company, you're not getting that fucking on trade. It ain't happening. That's my rant. I'm sorry. I'll be nicer now. You know what'll help me?
Oh! I take it that is the alcohol of choice for today,
yes,
for you.
Yes, it is. And it's funny because it's kind of coming full circle. This, I think, was one of the very first bourbons I ever drank on our podcast. Because I like went back through our website. It was like, it was way at the bottom.
It was way at the bottom.
Way at the bottom.
Yes. One of my favorites. One of my favorite bourbons. If you would like to explain to the audience what you are drinking.
This, my friends, is Blade and Bow. It was the original one I had was gifted to me, and I almost feel like it was a bad thing because it started off with such good stuff and everything was kind of second fiddle to it. But we're back and I get to kind of drink it and review it again. I've already had a small glass while we were talking. Mm. Very smooth. Lots of vanillas, oak, almost like a hint of cinnamon kind of smell and taste to it. But for being, 91 proof, very, very smooth, very tasty. And we're going to pour some more. I wonder if you can hear that. Oh yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, audience.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Mmm, sounds good.
Mmm. Yeah, that's a little bit of wonderful right there.
Okay. Okay, today, myself, I am, of course, always drinking my beer, but, my dear man,
pretty glass.
Thank you.
You got the beautiful round ice cube in there. Very pretty.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is a rum. It is a sipping rum.
Oh, you took my advice and, well, you've had it before, but...
It is a sipping rum from the West Indies, made and distilled by the Bamboo Rum Company. It is called Bamboo. Let me come over here if I can get my mouse to work. Yes, share screen. Boom. There's the lovely little bottle that it comes in.
Pretty.
All right. That's $44 here. It is 70 proof. That's not bad.
No, not at all.
Authentic Caribbean. This is the flagship of the Bamboo Rum Company. Let's see here. Hmm. Dude, that is like drinking a shot of vanilla extract.
Oh, wow.
That is extremely good. yeah, how do I explain this? There is a lot of vanilla in it. Not a lot of spices. I thought it was going to be spiced. Yeah.
And and when I had mine a couple weeks ago, I was the same way. I thought it was going to be like a dark rum, but it was not. It was just.
I mean, that's something that you could sit there and sip all night long. It's got a lot of vanilla flavor to it, which is kind of weird. It's not a caramel flavor. It's vanilla. Wow. I'm going to give that a 2 thumbs up. That shit will put hair on your chest, and I'm going. I'll tell you right now, that will creep up on you. But most sipping rums will creep up on you. That's why they make it. Yes, I could totally. You know what I could see drinking that with? Like a root beer. Mixing it with root beer.
Interesting.
Yes, I think that would go very well with the root beer. I think it would, because it's not like totally sweet because of the alcohol content in it.
Right, right.
But it's got sweet tones. I think that vanilla mixed with root beer would just totally knock your socks. I think you'd be like, ooh, this is like cream soda. That's what it was. That's what it tasted. It tastes like cream soda.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dude, I only bought a little 350 milliliter bottle of this. This I got this from our buddy.
Your good friend, friend, yes.
And this is, I'm going to have to bring you some. When I drive up there in my BMW. All right. Is there anything else we need to discuss before we take our first break?
As far as I know, I think we're good, man.
Okay. I know that there was something else that I had to bring up, and I just didn't, and I don't know.
Well, if you think of it over the break, we can, you know.
I almost did buy that Ford Mustang. I almost did it. And it had very low miles.
Mm-hmm.
And it had the V6 engine in it, which is going to be a heck of a lot better for gas mileage than the V8.
Oh, yeah.
I literally almost did it. But the fact that I've never had a Ford make it over 200,000 miles drove me nuts. Every Ford I've owned has always died at like 150 or 175. And with the prices that they have out there right now, this is insane. I mean, I was lucky to find a 2011. Okay, that's 11 years old, people. And I'm paying almost $10,000 for it. That's insane.
Yeah.
This world needs to come to an end. On that note, I guess I'm going to I'm gonna lead us into our first break.
Okay.
With
something new?
You know, you say it's a little bit loud. You might want to turn your ears down a little bit because I haven't changed my levels in.
Well, your voice is fine. The music, however, is so loud I have to take my earbuds out.
What, this music?
I can hear it from out here.
We'll be back.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. And we've lowered prices. You can save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Movie ever. Betcha Burke can name that tune in four notes. Okay. I've had enough fun with that. Hey, today, ladies and gentlemen, Scott had this brilliant idea after watching a bunch of Tim Burton movies to rank our top 10 directors. Correct?
Yes, yes, you did.
There we go. And Lone Wolf McQuade's director did not make my list.
What?
I know.
The heck?
I don't think Burke can handle that.
I don't know what to do myself, man. I've kind of lost all respect for you.
Oh, listen to that, baby. Hey, this was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I started getting into this, and I'm like, oh, I should have this director on there. I'm like, no, wait a minute, this is my favorite. It's not who, like, should be the best director. And I was like, once I put it in that mind frame, I'm like, oh, this is much more fun. But it was like, it was tough. I mean, you I know you only have 10. I have two honorable mentions that I just want to, like, pop real quick in there. So, but
yeah, and that's fine. The reason I didn't have any honorable mentions was because it was hard enough to pick the directors that I picked, but I felt it almost a disservice to honorably mention somebody like Francis Ford Coppola. I mean, that's like saying, oh, you're just not good enough. And that's not it at all. This list is the directors that I love to watch their films.
Yeah. This is an opinion poll, I don't even know how to describe it. This is how I feel. This is not like, you know, do I think Francis Ford Coppola is the best director in the world? He's one of them. Did he make my list? No. Is he good? Yes. Do I appreciate him? It's kind of like me and scotch. Yeah. I know good scotch when I taste it. I just don't like it. And that's me. I'm just a different breed of cat.
It was very hard to go through the list that I had and cut out people like that. But in the end, I have a different taste.
Yeah.
Just like Burke has. This is why I think this is going to be an interesting list, because Burke's tastes are different than mine.
Now, I'd be willing to bet we've got, I'm going to say, 4 minimum crossovers.
I was going to say half, but 4 sounds a little bit better.
Okay.
Okay, so with that, I have my notes on Google Drive because Burke's taught me that Google Drive saves everyone's life.
And you can look at it on your phone or at work or where. Yeah, it's just the poo. Now, I would like to bring up the word of the day.
Uh-oh. Wait, when did we start having a word of the day?
Just for this show. The word of the day is auteur. Did you come across that word in your looking up all these fine directors?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember it.
Okay. Noun, a filmmaker whose personal influence and artistic control over a movie are so great that the filmmaker is regarded as the author of the movie.
Ah.
There are a couple auteurs, I would imagine, on both of our lists, but just keep that in mind.
I do believe, since the majority of the directors that I have were actually the writers of the movies.
Well, and that is something else also. I did kind of notice that, like, most of my picks were not only directors, they were writers and producers. And a lot of them did all three on a lot of their films. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I think we're going to have a little bit of crossover. The auteurs, I definitely believe that almost every one of the directors that I've chosen would definitely fall in that category.
All right, so real quick, just two runners up. Frank Darabont, who was the director of The Mist, Walking Dead episodes, The Green Mile, and The Shawshank Redemption.
Absolutely brilliant director.
He only has 11 director credits to his name, yeah. Although he was nominated for an Oscar 3 times. And just Shawshank is one of my absolute all-time favorites, and I had to give him a shout out because I love Shawshank. I'm like, I love, he's looking up at the clouds at the, you know, stormy sky at the end, and I was like, oh god, I have to have him on there. And then the other guy, David Lean. Ever heard of him?
No.
Great Expectations, Oliver Twist.
Oh.
The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Great flick.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
And another one of my absolute all-time favorites, Dr. Zhivago.
Ah, that's come up before.
Oh, yeah. 19 director credits, 1-2 Oscars. So those are my shout out. And Wes Anderson would probably be in there because I just love his look and style and framing. And but anyway, okay. 2.5. Sorry.
That's okay. why don't you start with your number 10?
My number 10 is kind of a relative newcomer. And I'm going to butcher his name probably to death because I believe he's French. Denis Villeneuve. Although he does have 23 director credits, 11 writer and 3 producer credits. He did the movie Sicario, which had 3 Oscar nominations. I'm going to bring up Oscar nominations quite a bit on my list. However, possibly okay. One of my most favorite ones on this whole list has 0 Oscar nominations, and yet I love his stuff to death. So it's a little bit of a metric, but not 100%. So yeah, this guy did Sicario, which had 3 Oscar nominations, Blade Runner 2049, which had 5 nominations and 2 wins, and Dune with 10 nominations and 6 wins. I don't have a ton on this guy, but he's got this weird way of making the audience confused, anxious, uncertain with his techniques of his filming. He'll present uncertainty and ambiguity gracefully through the cinematic techniques and music, cinematography, storytelling, editing, color, and vision. Obviously taken a lot of cues from some of the people that are going to show up in this list here, because this stuff is beautiful. I mean, Sicario was a good looking film. Blade Runner 2049 was gorgeous. And I felt really embraced the original Blade Runner, at least in the visual category, and the fact that you don't have to have dialogue to tell a story. And I think that's one of the themes with many of these directors here. If you're a good director, you can tell the story. You could turn the sound off.
Yeah.
And know what's going on through what you're looking at, what the expressions on the faces of the actors are. You know, you don't have to listen to a film to get what's going on. And that's one thing I think this guy kind of has down pat. I'm just dying to see the next Dune film come out, because I'm a big old Dune-aholic, so that's my number 10.
Okay. I'm looking because I thought one of the guys that... Maybe not. Maybe I'm smoking crack. Who knows?
Who knows?
Maybe
you just had some on your pizza. Your crack pizza is pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think so. let's see here.
fire. Tends to catch fire in the pizza oven. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so, Savage. I swear I saw Blade Runner on one of my lists, but
it's going to show up in one of my lists.
It may have. I don't know. All right, so my number 10. I had to look this word up. Apotheosis.
I have heard that word. Forgive me. I do not recall what it means.
Well, let me tell you here. The next, or the number 10 on my list, was born July 29th, 1953, in Brooklyn, New York. He is a celebrated American documentarian.
Oh, wow. I did not have a documentarian on my list.
He achieved his apotheosis with the movie The Civil War.
And we all know, between the two of us, who's a big history buff around here.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't me. I mean, I like history, but not
It would definitely be me.
It'd be you.
This person's name is Ken Burns, and Ken Burns has been a documentarian for years.
No, wait, but skinny guy, dark hair?
Skinny guy, dark hair.
Kind of tall. I know this dude. Yes.
I wouldn't say tall. He's only 5'7". They actually.
Oh, really? He just comes off that way. But he's very skinny and
Very skinny. Looks very emaciated. But
yeah,
here was the thing with the Civil War. You have a movie with some of the biggest actors in the world playing in it. And when I say biggest actors in the world, I'm not mixing words. This movie had, let me bring up my list here, starring Sam Waterston, wait, yes, this is it, Julie Harris,
okay,
let's see here, Morgan Freeman, Jason Robards.
Oh, well.
George Plimpton. Jeremy Irons. Okay, so that was the miniseries version of the Civil War.
Which was 1990, so that was one of his kind of his first gigs, pretty much.
Actually,
first big one.
That was his first big, first big show that he did. Later,
he has ranged all over the place with his stuff.
Look, he did the documentary on Frank Lloyd Wright. Anyone who knows me knows that is probably the biggest architect in my book. I have every book Frank Lloyd Wright ever wrote.
You know we have a Frank Lloyd Wright house here in Canton, right?
Yes, you know that the only theater that he designed is right here in Dallas, and I've worked in it many times. Let's see here. He did a lot of documentaries on items around what is it called? New York.
Brooklyn Bridge, I saw on there somewhere.
Yes.
National parks, baseball, Prohibition. Yeah. Walden. Oh, wow.
He did an entire mini series on baseball, the history of baseball. That lasted 1994 to 2010.
God damn.
Yeah, no shitoli. I'm sorry. Okay, so he was nominated for 2 Oscars.
Nice.
Never won an Oscar, but won 47 other awards in his lifetime of doing what he does. He's just I met him at one of the Civil War reenactments that
really
we did, and he is the type of director who gets he gets into the project. He lives that project while he's doing it, and everything he's done has been golden as far as the documentaries go. So there you go. That is my number 10.
That's a kick-ass pick there. That kudos on that one, man.
I really liked him, and I think he deserved to be on my top 10.
He deserved to be on a list. Yeah, absolutely.
So there you go. How about you, sir?
My number 9. We've talked about this guy just recently. It's Mr. Tim Burton.
Ooh, I do believe. Okay,
I'm not he might be anything. On your top 10 list somewhere.
He might be there.
He might be there.
He might be there.
26 producer credits, 16 writer credits. We've talked. I don't have a ton about him because we did a whole big long show about Mr. Burton and all his stuff, but. Yeah, Pee Wee's Big Adventure and Beetlejuice and Batman and Edward Scissorhands and Ed Woods, and Mars Attacks, and Sleepy Hollow, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Now, I love his whimsical style. I mean, like, even his live action movies look like a cartoon or a comic book. I dig that. I dig his aesthetic. His stuff can get dark, and I really dig that because I love me some dark humor and whatnot. So no, it's
but the okay, something that we discussed when we did the Tim Burton thing was that while he can get dark, it never goes into a place where it's horror.
Yeah, it's not totally scary without redemption.
Right. Beetlejuice was brilliant. What a freaking brilliant movie.
Yeah.
Still gave me nightmares when I was younger.
Yeah, I mean, there's some images that are just bloody frightening. But, I mean, you know, the ending is happy and rainbows and whatnot. And, yeah, no, it's all's well that ends well.
Nightmare Before Christmas was brilliant. Corpse Bride was brilliant.
Yeah. I love watching his movies, so he had to be on my list. So that's my number 9.
Well, I'm sure that we might have a little discussion about him a little bit later.
I figured. That's why I didn't go too much into this one. He's much more your favorite than mine. I love him. He's on my list.
He's on my list, but he is much higher. Number 9 for me, comes a gentleman born March 27th, 1963 in Knoxville, Tennessee. Knoxville, Tennessee. I had no clue about that.
Already then.
I don't know why they give the height, but he's 6'1".
Already.
In January of 1992, he became a first-time writer-director for the movie Reservoir Dogs.
Ah.
I am talking about the infamous Quentin Tarantino. There are lots of reasons to love Quentin Tarantino. Now, one of them is the fact that Kill Bill, he put Uma, was it Uma Thurman in that?
Yes.
Yeah. In a tight bodysuit, and that just I think the only other movie that she looked better in was The Producers, but that's, you know.
He also shows up on my list just a touch higher, so.
Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
this was the movie that got me with Quentin. I was like, this is freaking brilliant. It was, you had to be.
You had to pay attention and think.
I hate to say this to people, but you actually have to be smart to understand the humor in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
You have to actually think. And the thing is that he's so good at masking it. I mean, he masks crazy as funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, he was so good at working. Now, John Travolta has been known as an actor that can be hard to work with sometimes. If he gets it into his head, he can be a hard person.
Quentin, it was directly responsible for getting him back on the scene because he hadn't done shit for years.
It was incredible. I mean, the way that he got, who was the guy? Lawrence Fishburne?
Samuel L. Jackson.
It wasn't. Why do I always get those two mixed up? Just the way that they worked together was.
Oh yeah, that was a great pairing. Oh my
and
god!
If you ever saw any of the behind the scenes looks, Quentin Tarantino is really, really big on discussions with his actors. He reminded me a lot of John Hughes. A lot of the behind the scenes stuff with John Hughes, he is molding that actor into what he wants.
But telling him why, not just telling him go do this. He's like, if you do this, this is going to do this and this and this, and it's all going to fall into place.
He's making him think. And I thought that was a wonderful thing. Let's see here. Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Kill Bill 1, Kill Bill 2.
Guest director on Sin City.
Another one of my favorite movies.
Oh, God, I love Sin City. Grindhouse, Inglourious Basterds, which is...
Inglourious Basterds, I think, is his pinnacle.
I'm thinking Pulp Fiction is kind of his Purple Rain, but Inglourious Basterds is so good. Oh, my gosh.
See, I don't know. I don't know about that, though. Inglourious Basterds is just... Here's the thing. He wrote it as well as directed it. So... Brad Pitt is an actor who is extremely good at what he does. You're gonna get a good.
You're gonna get a quality piece of performance out of this kid, no matter what.
Right, but Eli Roth was just—he was to die for. Eli Roth played Sergeant Donnie Donowitz.
Mm-hmm.
And he was funny. I don't know how they wrote this stuff. Because it was beyond silly and funny. And I actually loved that movie probably just as much as I loved Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction was his beginning of the fame, though. Django was
that was a brutal movie. I like that movie, though.
Django Unchained, he wrote it. I did not know this, but he wrote two episodes of CSI.
Yes, I saw that, yeah.
So I just I really loved him as a director. He has won 2 Oscars. He has been nominated 286 times for awards and won 170.
Yeah. And let's just say he is the smartest man for bringing in Christoph Waltz into Inglourious Basterds. He is one of the most terrifying villains without being overtly crazy. He is just a scary individual in that film. It's terrifying to watch him, which is, I love that to death.
Yeah, the character that he plays is just ruthless. He does not
hold.
Yeah, he does not give psychotic, a crap about anyone.
Oh, God, so good. And he's so nice and warm in Django Unchained. I don't get it. You know, it's like he's great acting and great directing. That's good stuff.
All right, sir. We are up to your number 8.
Well, you know what we're going to do here in the near future, so we got to bring him up. Peter Jackson.
Somehow I feel he is on my list somewhere.
Okay, so maybe we're going to do more than 5.
Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson, gosh. Inventor of Weta Studios.
Yes. Well, the co-creator, but yeah.
Well, okay, co-create, that's still, he is one of the guys that created it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And anyone who doesn't know what Weta is, Weta actually was the first company to
special effects for movie and television in New Zealand, right?
Not just special effects. What it was computer aided graphics for movies. So, Gollum.
Yeah, the forefather of mocap.
Yeah, that, you know, he was, his studios, between them and Industrial Lights and Magic, those were the two groups that advanced computer-generated graphics and computer-generated images into the movies. Yep. And made them look real. You know, ILM was the first, and Weta really took it over and made the graphics work. They were the first ones that got actors to act and then computer generate over them so that the characters actually looked like a human being moving.
And it was one of the first times that they were able to capture that and show it to the director in real time. That group did just some amazing stuff. Obviously, you know, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings, Two Towers, Return of the King, King Kong, which I like that movie. I mean, I know it didn't do great, but I like that movie. The 3 Hobbit movies. He just did the Beatles Get Back documentary. And that was just a really kind of a cool miniseries to watch also. He helped to write and produce all of those movies. So this, once again, we got the total tour thing going on. One of the interesting things about him is that he wanted the highest quality movies and the lowest cost. So when he made Lord of the Rings originally, somehow he talked the studios into letting him film all 3 simultaneously. This did a couple things. Hollywood's regular practice is to shoot movies, one trilogy at one at a time, minimizing the financial risk in case the first one flops. But when he did all 3 simultaneously, you didn't have to tear down and rebuild sets. You didn't have the first movie coming out being hugely successful and then the actors renegotiating the money. And they don't age either. Like, you know, they all look this, you know, because those 3 movies took place over a couple months of of time, and it took a couple of years, but at least you know the actors aren't like aging horribly after a couple of years waiting for the next film to come out. He kept the cost down. Take a guess as to the three movies: The Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, and Return of the King. How much do you think those three films cost?
Oh, I couldn't even guess. $100 million a piece.
You're pretty close. $280 million for all three movies. I mean, considering that today that's you not... could spend $400 million on one. Back in the day, that was pretty darn. And he had all of those special effects to pay. Like you know, so I mean, it was pretty amazing back in the day.
Okay.
So yeah, Weta Workshop, blah 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 blah. So yeah, no, he's my number 8, 29 producer, 20 writer credits, 9 Oscar nominations, 3 wins.
I actually listened to an interview that he did when he did Lord of the Rings, and Warner Brothers at that time had not upgraded their intro logo, and it was New Line Cinemas, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
it was New Line. New Line had not updated their intro scene, and Weta went and redid all of their graphics and didn't tell them and put it in the beginning of the movie. And they never noticed that all their graphics had been changed.
Upgraded. Like,
that's awesome.
Wow, this looks really good.
Peter Jackson will come up again.
Alrighty, so what is your number 8 then?
My number 8 is a gentleman born August 16th, 1954 in Kapuskasing, Ontario, Canada.
Okay.
His nickname is Iron Jim. James Francis Cameron was born August 16th, 1954, in whatever capital of Ontario, Canada. Everyone is going to remember James Cameron from Titanic.
Yeah,
but what most people don't remember is that he started out with a bunch of different movies.
Oh, no. He started out with like a TV series that was like a Hanna-Barbera, wasn't it?
Xenogenesis was a short made in 1978. Then his next movie that he directed was Piranha 2. But where he hit his true, what do you call that?
Epiphany? Stride?
Yeah. Would be in 1984 with The Terminator. Yes, James Cameron is the director who directed almost all of The Terminators.
Yep. He's going to be on my list too, just so you know.
He directed one of my favorite outer space movies. Alien.
No. Aliens.
Aliens. Sorry. 1986 Aliens. Terminator 2. True Lies.
What I love that film.
That is just a fun film to watch. Earthship TV. Which was a TV movie documentary.
Okay.
He did Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
And All of those, yes, he was Mr. Titanic. Apparently Avatar 3 is in, Avatar 2 is in post-production, Avatar 3 is in post-production, Avatar 4 is filming, Avatar 5 is filming.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Avatars coming out soon.
I don't know how many blue people we need to stare at, but we're going to. This gentleman has won 3 Oscars. And I do believe Titanic was the first. Yes, Titanic, Best Director, Best Picture, and Best Film Editing.
Oh, Titanic had 14 nominations and 11 wins total.
Oh, they're only listing Best Film Editing, Best Director, and Best Picture.
Avatar had 9 nominations, 3 wins.
Oh, you see, that's his 3 wins, though. That's his 3. He won for Best Picture, he won for Best Director, and he won for Best Film Editing. Okay.
Actually, Terminator 2 Judgment Day had 6 nominations and 4 wins.
Yes, but that wasn't James Cameron himself winning.
No. I'm just saying the films. And I'm going off of, like, if you direct a film and you have that much control like James Cameron does, that kind of seeps into everything. The film won that many Oscars. It probably no small part. Ooh, to him.
He won the Dallas-Fort Worth Film Critics Association Award for Titanic in 1998.
There is no higher honor in this land.
Yeah, I did not vote for him.
What about The Abyss? You didn't even mention that. I love The Abyss.
The Abyss was not high on my list.
Really?
Yeah, it was not.
Oh, God, I love that.
Come on, listen to what I named off. I mean, Avatar, Titanic. He directed one episode of Dark Angel, which was a great.
Yeah.
That was a great TV series, everyone. If you have not watched that, go watch it. He did the Expedition of the Bismarck, which if you don't know what James Cameron became very important in the world of sea exploration with the Titanic movie. Mm-hmm. He gathered an entire group of people, a consortium, to spend millions and millions of dollars to do underwater research trying to find the Titanic, trying to find the Bismarck, you know, all these things. So yeah, the Abyss wasn't really on my list, but look at these documentaries that he did on finding the Titanic.
Yeah. Yeah, some cool stuff.
He's just a really, really neat director who I think was kind of a visionary for not just sci-fi stuff, but the way that he recreated the Titanic was just insanely awesome.
Oh yeah.
All except for the fact that what's his name dies, Leonardo DiCaprio.
He didn't have to. Bullshit.
It was a bullshit story. All right. We're up to Burke's number 7.
My number 7. And once again, I looked at this guy and I'm like, I just like watching his films. I enjoy his stuff. I'm putting him on here. Mr. Robert Zemeckis.
He is not on my list.
Oh, thank goodness. I think we're up to more than 5 at this point. So Mr. Zemeckis has 33 director credits, 1 Oscar win, 53 producer credits, and 29 writer credits. Such movies as Used Cars, Romancing the Stone, and then, you know, you got Back to the Future, 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And those are just fun films. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? That is just a fun film.
He has a very, very keen comedic mind.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And Who Framed Roger Rabbit was just a blast of a film. If you watch any of the behind-the-scenes stuff, every person that was on that film says they loved doing that film.
Death Becomes Her.
I love that film.
I love that film. Oh, my God, I love that film. And Forrest Gump. I mean, come on. Who doesn't know, who hasn't heard of Forrest Gump? He also did Contact, which I have read that book by Carl Sagan. So I didn't hate it as much as a lot of people did. I kind of liked it. Castaway.
Wait, who hated it?
There are a lot of people that did not like Contact.
I loved it.
I thought it was great. It's Zemeckis. He took some... I mean, every time Hollywood does a movie on a book, they're going to take a lot of, that's not going to translate well into film. Let's change it. There's a lot of stuff changed, and that's okay. I still enjoyed that movie immensely. Castaway, that is just a fantastic film from beginning to end. I mean, you feel like you are going down in an airplane in the ocean, and it is scary as hell. And I love that film. And the Polar Express, I've not seen it all the way through. It's a family favorite of a bunch of people. I felt like I had to mention it. And he was another one of those pioneers of digital cinema and CGI. He really pushed getting that into movies. As a matter of fact, around the year 2000, he helped finance the Center for Digital Arts at the University of Southern California. That's how much this guy loves computer stuff in movies, that he wants future people to get into it and do it and improve it. And this guy is all over the place. I mean, great range of stories, great range of genres. I mean, those are all favorites films of mine. So I had to put him on my list, and there he is. That's my number 7.
Okay, we've got 2 minutes and 50 seconds to make it through my number 6 and your number 6. Are you ready for my number 6?
Yes.
Oh, shit, I'm on number 7.
Oh, you're 7.
Yeah, we're going to have to break here soon. Do you remember us talking about a movie called Alien?
Yes, you thought and that you, somebody you else said, did it.
You said, no, that's Aliens. Well, Alien is on my list and is one of the movies from this gentleman, born 1937, November 30th, in South Shields, County Durham, England. He also, remember me saying, I think I heard Blade Runner somewhere in my list somewhere. Blade Runner, Black Rain, one of my all-time favorite movies.
I've never seen it or heard of it.
Hold on here. You've got to be kidding me. You've not, okay.
We've gone back and forth with I can't believe you've not seen that before, so don't judge me.
Michael Douglas
plays
a New York City cop,
and
he arrests a Yakuza member and must escort him back to Japan, where he's being extradited to. It is just Andy Garcia is in it. Ken Takakura is in it. Michael Douglas. And it's just, it's brilliant. They end up killing his partner, and it's, he goes basically into the underground in Japan to make sure that his man gets turned in. And I mean, this is one of those movies where honor is incredibly important. They cut a guy's finger off just because he didn't fulfill his prophecy.
His obligation.
Anyways, that's just part of what Sir Ridley Scott has done.
He's very high up on my list, just so you know.
Scott wanted to join the Royal Army. His elder brother, Frank, had already joined. That was my timer saying,
yeah, I know, hey. I heard it. Hey, time break.
Yeah, it's been 45 minutes. You need to shut the fuck up. And but I'm going to finish my Ridley Scott stuff.
You go for it.
In 1962, he joined the BBC as a trainee in set design.
He started
as a set designer and moved up through the BBC to become not only a director. Well, he did editing for a while. He formed a company called Ridley Scott Associates, who became a production company, basically. He formed that with his younger brother, Tony Scott. You might hear about him later on, too. Blade Runner, 1982. This was my first introduction to Ridley Scott.
Oh, wow. See, I'd seen Alien in the movie theater originally.
You see, I wasn't allowed to see Alien.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to see it. But I was in high school, and I was taking a course. It was through the English department, but it was all about films.
Oh, wow.
And how to relate to different films. Blade Runner was actually one of the films that we were told to watch. We watched Blade Runner. We watched Westworld with Yul Brynner.
And Brolin the Senior.
and the thing is that we watched all these movies to learn how to discuss and critique different movies. So we would watch the movies in school, and then we would do speeches on our critique of the movie. And Ridley Scott just absolutely blew my mind with Blade Runner.
Oh yeah.
In 2003, the Queen awarded a knighthood to Ridley Scott. He became a sir.
Sir. It's not as good as being a baron or a lord, but it's pretty up there.
You know, he's almost as high as we are, but not quite. Plus, he's not a reverend.
Yeah, I was going to say, Reverend Lord Petty Officer Count Scott Davis.
Lord of Kerry. okay, what else is there? Gladiator, Black Hawk Down. Black Hawk Down, what a great film.
It's not one that I've seen all the way through. I think I probably should.
I think it would be hard for you to watch because of the fact that it interests me because I'm ex-military.
Yeah.
I don't think that it would interest you that much. I do have to say this. The success of Star Wars in 1977 inspired Scott's interest in making science fiction. And he accepted the offer to direct Dan O'Bannon's low-budget science fiction horror movie Alien. I really don't know what else to say about this man.
I got a little bit more to say later on, so it's all good.
Oh, then I'm going to hold off on that. And guess what time it is?
It's time to take a break.
Yes. Where am I gonna? What am I gonna? Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that one. We'll do that one right there.
Thank you.
Tonight is my appraisal, 'cause I'm a hooker selling songs and my pimp's a record label. This world is full of demon stocks and bonds and Bible traders. So I do the deed, get up and leave, a climber and a sadist, yeah. Are you ready for the sequel? Ain't ready for the latest in the garden of evil. I'm gonna be the greatest in a golden cathedral. I'll be praying for the faithless.
We'll be right back, guys.
See you soon.
Hey, make sure that you check back soon for part two of this podcast.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. And we've lowered prices. You can save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.